Ric Flair has wrestled a lot of matches in his career. Thousands of matches Ric Flair has wrestled. And he's actually wrestled a lot of last matches in his career. He lost the match to Hulk Hogan at Halloween Havoc back in 1994. That was a retirement match. He was back 3 months later. Then, of course, was the build to WrestleMania. He got to handpick Shawn Michaels as his final opponent. Right, great respect for Shawn Michaels. They went into WrestleMania that year in Orlando. The big, I'm sorry, I love you moment there at the end of their match. Flair goes down, has the greatest send-off any wrestler has been given. Maybe outside of the biggest of names from Mexico and Japan, who probably had funerals with thousands upon thousands of people. When they passed away, or retirements also, with thousands upon thousands of people. Outside of those biggest cultural icons that you can think of, the Ric Flair retirement in 2008 was the perfect send-off for someone who is considered by many to be the greatest of all time. He ruined that retirement by coming back to TNA only a few years later. And TNA was the last match that Ric Flair ever had before tonight. It was September of 2011. It was a television match. It was Sting preparing for a pay-per-view match against Hulk Hogan. Ric Flair was the setup guy. They had a match on an episode of Impact. That was 11 years ago, and that was the last time that Ric Flair officially stepped into a wrestling ring. Tonight, Jim Crockett Promotions was revived for one night only. In name only, hosting what they billed as Ric Flair's final match from the Municipal Auditorium in Nashville, Tennessee, a legendary venue that has played host to many wrestling events over the years, including the classic Music City Showdown back in 1989 between Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat. No holds barred, the match, the movie, when they taped the cage match that night with Hogan and Beefcake against Randy Savage and Zeus, it was in that venue. And multiple Starrcade events from the mid-90s. The earliest of the TNA shows were held there as well. So a very wrestling-rich venue. And the reason that I ultimately ordered this pay-per-view tonight, because when it was initially announced, the idea of watching Ric Flair in the ring did not appeal to me. The reason why I ended up watching this show tonight had to do with that on your screen, the card. Conrad Thompson and the people who put this show together tonight, I thought, did a hell of a job of putting together a card with wrestlers from all promotions, MLW, Impact, AEW, Ring of Honor, all across the spectrum here. New Japan Pro Wrestling, AAA. It was a nice representation of different promotions with some matches that I was actually really looking forward to on this show. So I decided to bite the bullet and order the pay-per-view. But of course, it was all about the main event. That's really why people bought a ticket to go to the show. That's why most people wanted to watch the show. Even morbidly, they wanted to see if something would happen, if Flair would collapse in the middle of the match, what's going to happen, right? They wanted to see how this was going to play out. Ric Flair almost died a few years ago. He had very serious heart issues. He had a very slim chance, frankly, of surviving what it was that he went through, and he was able to pull through. But he is 73 years old, and he looks every bit of it. 73 years old with a pacemaker in his chest. I don't know how Ric Flair was cleared to actually wrestle and participate even in an exhibition like this. I know he's been training. I know he could still take bumps. He was showing us all those videos of him and Jay Lethal. But watching him in the ring tonight after just the first few minutes, I really am puzzled by how someone like him could be cleared when you have athletic commissions in some of these states that are supposed to oversee this sort of thing, because this looked like a disaster waiting to happen. And there were other wrestlers on the card tonight, including Ricky Morton, who were up there as well. Ricky Morton is 65 years old. Ricky Morton, though, does not have the same health issues that Ric Flair has had. And Ricky Morton has also been wrestling pretty regularly now for many years. In fact, this is his final year. This is the final year of the Rock and Roll Express. They're in the middle of their farewell tour. So Ric Flair is hardly the only wrestler in his 60s or even early 70s to step in the ring. We saw Jerry Lawler make a cameo on the show tonight. Jerry the King Lawler is still wrestling on some weekends. Jerry Lawler, I believe, is also in his early 70s. Somewhere around there. And Lawler had his own health scare many years ago. So Flair is hardly the only one. But watching him out there tonight, it was sad. And I think we all knew that it would be. It was sad to see him at certain points during that main event. They put him in a tag team match. That was the best possible match for him to be in. To put him in a singles match, I don't see how you could watch this pay-per-view and think it would have been anything close to a good idea to put him in a singles match. I don't think it was a good idea to put him in a tag team match after seeing him out there. But it was uncomfortable at moments. Because he came out initially and, you know, he had the t-shirt on, which he said he would. And, you know, he looked okay and he was, you know, ready to go. And cosmetically, he was in the best shape that you could ask him to possibly be in. But it was only a few minutes into that main event. You could see where he's a 73-year-old man who has not done this in a very long time. He hasn't gotten the reps in. It's one thing to get in the ring with Jay Lethal in practice and trained for a few weeks, but that's very different than getting in the ring on a consistent basis. He has not gotten in the ring on a consistent basis in over a decade. He's a decade older now than he was the last time we saw him, and he didn't look great the last time we saw him. The MVP of that main event tonight, the MVP of this entire show, was not Ric Flair, it was not Jay Lethal, it was nobody else in that main event except Jeff Jarrett. I want to give the man credit because this was a big weekend for Jeff Jarrett. He was at SummerSlam last night, special referee for the Usos and the Street Profits tag team title match. He was on SmackDown Friday night. Obviously, he works for WWE now. He's got that sweet, cushy executive position. But he was in the main event of this show tonight. 55 years old himself. Jarrett was actually, I thought, in tremendous shape. He and Karen both, they came out, and this was old school wrestling shit that we saw from him in that main event. And the heat that he was getting and the stalling, I mean, you could tell that they were stalling and they were all the smoke and mirrors and they were trying to drag things out. But I have to say, Jarrett, I thought, was the MVP of that main event. It was uncomfortable at moments to watch Flair barely able to move, trying to get oxygen into his lungs, especially at the very end. You know, I would say the first half of the match really wasn't too bad. But the second half, and that, especially that last third of the match, and when Andrade was trying to put the knucks, and we'll get into the match here in a little bit, but he was trying to put the brass knucks on Flair's hand. And he had to physically put it on Flair's hand because Flair just wasn't moving. He was sucking wind. He was trying to get oxygen into his lungs. And that was the point in the match where I thought, okay, this could get bad here. But he was able to get up and go to the finish. So it was uncomfortable. But the people who paid to go to this event, the big takeaway from me watching this, I said I was looking forward to some of the undercard matches. The undercard suffered greatly because I think, by and large, the people who were there for one match. I mean, it was literally called Ric Flair's last match. That is what they called the pay-per-view. They were not there to see Jonathan Gresham. They were not there to see Jacob Fatu or Killer Cross or Ricky Morton, they might have been there to see. This felt like more of an old-school wrestling audience. And shout-out to Anthony D'Agostino for subbing to the channel. This was a crowd in that building who wanted to see Ric Flair. And to that end, I would guess that if you were to poll most of the people who were in the building tonight, they would say that it was well worth it because they got to see what they were told was Ric Flair's final match. And he survived. He did not have to get carted off on a gurney. He did not have to get carried out with an oxygen mask, although it looked like he needed an oxygen mask. But he left on his own two feet. It did not turn tragic. He made it through. He walked to the back. He got to cut a nice speech at the end of the night. He had his friends. He had his family. He had pretty big stars that were turning out here tonight that were in the front row. I got a picture I'll show everybody a little bit later on. But I think the people who bought this show or went to the show to see Ric Flair wrestle his final match, especially if you're an old Jim Crockett Promotions fan, probably got what they paid for. They got their money's worth. They got to see history in the making, right? And I thought that Conrad and the people who put the show together production-wise actually did a hell of a job. We had different announcers for different matches representing different promotions. The video packages they put together, we had Tony Schiavone carrying the entire show with David Crockett. Crockett probably didn't need to be there for the entire show. Obviously, he's not very familiar with the current wrestling product. I think having him out there for the main event would have been just fine. But I thought production-wise and just giving it that kind of old-school feel with the Jim Crockett Promotions backdrop and everything, I thought they did a good job with that. And I think in execution, the idea of bringing all of these talents together, it was a smart idea to build up to the main event. But when it was over, I just felt it was just sad. I keep going back to 2008. And I know why he did it, and he said he did it for the money. He says, I don't need the money now, but back then he needed the money. I still find that incredible to believe that, you know, he wasn't under some kind of a WWE deal and that, you know, Vince McMahon wouldn't have taken care of him because Vince had taken care of him for years before that. But he did it for the money and squandered what I thought was just the perfect way to go off into the sunset. Tonight, though, he made it through. I hope that this is the final match. I know they build it that way and we kind of joke, oh yeah, you know, final match, we've heard this before. This really just needs to be it. If his goal was to go out there and prove to himself that he could do it after what happened to him a few years ago, that he could train, that he could get in the ring one last time and just prove to himself that he could have one more match, then tonight he accomplished that. He should absolutely never climb into a wrestling ring ever again. I do not want to see Ric Flair out there in the way that I saw him in that match tonight. Because it's just very sad. It's just very sad to see him in that state. We're going to go through this entire show, and I have more thoughts on this main event. I need you to do me a favor, which is hit that like button if you would. On this video, hit that thumbs up, and I already know we have a bunch of super chats coming on in. So we will go through your super. I don't even know how many of you actually watched the show. I get the sense this is going to be one of those reviews where the vast majority of the people here probably did not watch the show, and they're waiting to find out from me exactly how the show was and who the winners and losers were. So I will fill you in on all of that. But again, hit that like button, and we'll go through all your super chats a little bit later on here in the stream. So I mentioned Tony Schiavone, and I mentioned David Crockett. They were on announced duty here for the pay-per-view, and they had Ian Riccaboni with them on commentary for the pre-show, because we had a couple of pre-show matches. They had a set behind the commentators. It was done up like the old Jim Crockett Promotion set when Schiavone and David Crockett used to do the announcing back in 1985. And so that was cool. Tony was very very laid back. He was kind of like leaning back. He was just kind of lounging out there. But hey, credit to Tony. He handled the entire show. He handled the entire broadcast. Jim Ross was one of the many testimonials that aired on this show tonight. He was not there. I know he has talked about how he really wanted to be there. It's very difficult now. Even though he does it for AEW every week, it's very difficult for JR to travel. He underwent all that radiation therapy for the skin cancer on his ankle, and, you know, he was able to get rid of the cancer. He's cancer-free, but it's very painful because of the pressure in the cabin and everything. Whenever he has to fly somewhere, it's extremely painful for him to travel. So he did not make the trip tonight. So Tony Schiavone handled the entire broadcast. But we opened the pre-show with the Battle of the New Japan Young Lions. Ren Narita against Yuya Uemura, replacing the injured Clark Connors, who I believe has a herniated disc in his back, I believe is the injury. This was just, you know, a nice and quick match. Narita picks up the win with a belly-to-belly overhead suplex into a very nice bridging pinfall, but 5 minutes, some good wrestling, in and out. We went to the Bunkhouse Battle Royal. They did this on the pre-show as well. I thought this Bunkhouse Battle Royal was garbage. I didn't like this at all. I thought this was crap. They already had wrestlers in the ring. James Storm and Bully Ray got their own entrances. Shivani then mentioned, about a minute into this, Shivani mentioned that there was a commotion around the production truck, and out comes Nick Gage with a microphone in his hand. This was part of this GCW invasion angle they were teasing going into the show. GCW was very upset they didn't have any representation on this card, so they were going to hijack the show. So Nick Gage came out. I don't even think Nick Gage did anything. Now that I think back on this, I don't even think he actually got involved and did much. But the final four in this were James Storm, Bully Ray, good old Bully the Clown was on the show. I don't know if we're going to get a Bully the Clown super chat tonight, but he did pop up on the show. Joey Janela and Mance Warner, those are your final four. Warner eliminated James Storm, Bully eliminated Janela, and pulled out a table, powerbomb Warner through it, and Mance Warner then reversed Bully's attempt to toss him out to eliminate Bully instead. That gave Mance Warner the win here in this Battle Royal. So Bully bounced a bunch of GCW guys, but got caught by one in the end. And after the match, a bunch of GCW guys returned to the ring to celebrate with Warner, who was presented with the boot and the belt buckle. That was the reward for the winner here of the Bunkhouse Stampede, just like the good old days, right? Got the belt and the buckle. And he drank beer out of the boot. And the less said about this battle royal, the better. So we get to the main card. And they opened, and this is one of the aspects of this show that I appreciated. It was, production-wise, some of the things that they did, like having Bob Caudle, right? The legendary announcer Bob Caudle opening the show. He is much older. He's not traveling. So they came to him, and they recorded a bunch of stuff at his house. And so he welcomed everybody to the show and sent it down to ringside to Tony Schiavone and David Crockett, who are on the call with Scott D'Amore for the opening contest, which was billed as a dream match. It was an Impact Wrestling dream match between the American Wolves and the Motor City Machine Guns. The Wolves and the Machine Guns had a lot of very memorable matches back in the day in Impact. I don't remember the last time these two teams faced off. I think it's been quite a while. And I thought the match, you know, it had some solid action, but, you know, you could feel like the crowd wasn't, you know, they weren't going gaga for this. It's like you see an opening match on a pay-per-view sometimes, and it's the first match of the night, even though technically this was the third match, but first match on the main card, and everybody's all full of energy. You have these two teams out there. People are going nuts. We didn't get any of that here in this match. We had the Guns with Davey on the defensive early on. Alex Shelley got cut off, and the Wolves worked him over. Chris Sabin got the hot tag, hit both the Wolves with a crossbody off the top, took Eddie Edwards down with a spinning DDT. Sabin hit both Wolves with a dive onto the floor, and Davey Richards hit a backpack stunner on Shelley. Edwards came off the top with a double stomp for a near fall. Sabin caught Shelley with a cutter, and the Guns finished off Eddie Edwards with the Skull and Bones, which is the Hangman's Neckbreaker crossbody combo for the win, which makes sense because Alex Shelley is the one who is fighting for the Impact World Championship on their pay-per-view in a few weeks. So it wouldn't have made sense to beat him. This was not anything blow-away like this match would have been years ago. I mean, you take this back many, many years ago. In front of like an Impact Wrestling audience, and this would have tore the house down. That's not what this was. This was much more subdued from these two teams. They gave them 10 minutes. If you would have added another 10 minutes on, and again, you go back a number of years, this thing would have been a match of the year candidate. I thought it was a solid opener. Alex Shelley, though, was selling, I hope he was just selling, he was selling a knee injury when the match was over. And the referee was checking on him, and he kind of waved the ref off, and, you know, like he was almost like pissed, and he posed in the corner. It's not like he couldn't stand up, but he was definitely, you know, nursing some kind of a knee injury. Hopefully all he was doing was just selling from the match, because obviously he's got a big match coming up in just a few weeks, and they can ill afford to have him go down to an injury. So they showed Al Snow. We had all the dignitaries in the crowd tonight, right? No one bigger than Al Snow and Santino Marella, who were sitting next to each other in the audience. They showed Vicky Guerrero in the crowd, as well as Mick Foley. And they also played video tributes throughout the night from lots of different people. So we had a video testimonial from Shawn Michaels. We had a video from Cody Rhodes, who was on the beach somewhere. It was Cody being Cody. It looked like he was looking out into I don't know where he was, Cancun or something. He was out in this beautiful beach area somewhere, and he questioned whether or not it was truly Ric Flair's final match. He said that Rick could do whatever he wants. He said Rick could show up on Monday Night Raw and put me in the figure four leg lock. Don't give this guy any ideas. What is Cody Rhodes doing? What is he thinking? Don't say that out loud. He's going to watch this back, and the thought bubble is going to pop up above his head. Don't give this man any ideas. He made it through the main event tonight. He's going to be thinking, well, wait a minute. I made it through to the other side. My boy Hunter is now running the show over there in WWE. They just put me back into the signature at the beginning of the show. They brought back my woo. Maybe they'll bring me back and I can put a figure four leg lock on Cody. Do not give this man any ideas. Do not give him any encouragement. Sting sent in a video that looked like it was recorded on a potato. Lex Luger sent in a video. Dolph Ziggler, Booker T, Jake Roberts, Jim Ross, and Will Sasso, among others. So they spliced these in all throughout the show. Next up was an MLW showcase match with Davey Boy Smith Jr. taking on Killer Cross with the lovely Scarlett Bordeaux. What in the world was Scarlett wearing tonight? Scarlett was, she was looking very nice. I mean, I'm thinking back to Maryse at SummerSlam last night. Maryse on my screen one night. The next night I have Scarlett on my screen. I will never complain about that. Imagine, by the way, having those two under contract to your company. And I know at the time Scarlett had some kind of an issue with, I think, her boob or something popped, whatever it was. So she was out, I think, injured for a while. But imagine having them under contract and getting rid of them and getting rid of him and just figuring, well, we have nothing we could do with these people. They were under contract at WWE at one point. Just imagine thinking that you couldn't find anything for these two to do. So they went back and forth for a little bit. Davey Boy Smith Jr., very good. Killer Cross, we know what he can do, right? Two big guys. So they go in there and they're having a back and forth exchange with backdrop suplexes. Cross got a choke and Smith countered with a roll up for two. And then stupidly rolled back into the cross jacket submission, but almost got a pin out of it. Cross hit a T-bone suplex and hit his forearm to the back of the head that he calls the quickening for the pin. Finish felt like it came out of nowhere. And this went maybe 5 minutes, so not much to this. This was actually pretty underwhelming. We had Jonathan Gresham, Alan Angels, who is no longer officially a member of the Dark Order. Konosuke Takeshita, my boy, Konosuke. Here, I thought he went back to Japan. I was very happy to see that he was on this card tonight. I had some of you in the chat were telling me the other day that, oh, he's on his way back to Japan. He's going back to DDT. And I said, no. No. He can't go back. Maybe he is going back, but he didn't go back yet. He was in this match. And the fourth person in the match was Nick Wayne. 17-year-old Nick Wayne. This was for a shot at the Progress World Championship at some point in the future. So I guess Jonathan Gresham did not give up on this whole wrestling thing after all. I thought he was supposedly leaving the wrestling business behind. But evidently not. I guess he's back. And he entered, this time he entered in full gear with the octopus mask in his usual gear that you would expect him to be in, unlike Death Before Dishonor last weekend. So this was another match here that did not get the time that it needed. It only got about 5 minutes. You know, you look at the four guys in this match, you give them 5 minutes. I mean, that's not nearly enough time. Takeshita got a near fall on Nick Wayne after a blue thunderbomb. Pin got broken up by Gresham. Angels and Wayne came off the top, hit moonsaults on Takeshita and Gresham on the floor. Alan Angels went for the cover on Wayne. Takeshita, though, broke it up with a deadlift German suplex. Gresham and Angels exchanged this great series of near falls that ended when Gresham got an O'Connor roll and a bridge for the pinfall win. And so he has earned himself a future shot at the Progress World Championship. He has spent quite a bit of time in Progress, so that's not really much of a surprise, other than the fact that I thought that he was going away for a while. Maybe cooler heads have prevailed. And having watched this match, I can see why people are always talking of this Nick Wayne kid, because I haven't gotten to see too much of him. But I was watching him here in this match, and everyone's always talking about, my God, this kid's going to be such a star. And you see it in this match here, because he's only 17 years old. This kid is not old enough to vote. And if he's this good at 17, then I have to concur with the general consensus that this kid's going to be a big star one day. So then we had what they billed as a legacy match, with Ricky Morton teaming up with his son, Kerry. Robert Gibson was out there in their corner, taking on Brian Pillman Jr. and Brock Anderson. I almost said Brock Lesnar. No confirmation, by the way, that Jonathan Gresham had a copy of the PWI 500 in his, in his trunks, carrying it around with him. I didn't see it. Maybe somebody in the chat saw. Maybe it fell out of his trunks during the match, and he quickly put it back in, but I cannot confirm nor deny that he was carrying around a copy of last year's PWI 500. So we had, it was Pillman Jr. and Brock Anderson, with Brock's father, Arn Anderson, the enforcer, who is not as close with Ric Flair. In fact, I don't think he's very close with Flair at all anymore. And he didn't come out there at the end of the show or anything like that to be part of the celebration, but he was on the card tonight. Nick Aldis came out to sit in on commentary for the match. Brock and Kerry, they started things out, but after some wrestling, Brock pointed over at Kerry's father. He wanted Ricky Morton tagged into this match. So in came Ricky Morton, and Ricky got the better of him. He gave him the 10 punches in the corner. 65 years old, Ricky Morton. I got to call a Ricky Morton, Rock and Roll Express tag team match in House of Glory a few years ago, and I was amazed by what I saw. To see it in person like that, and to see this guy pulling off a destroyer and doing dives and things like that, I mean, it was insane. It's crazy. And this was a couple of years ago, and here he's still going. Actually, it was probably 3 years ago now, but he's still going. He's in the middle of his farewell tour. And then he and his son pulled off a double drop kick. Later on, Brock slammed Kerry's head into the knee of Brian Pillman, who fell off the ankle, sold the knee. Payne, Ricky made a hot tag, had Brock pin. Pillman, though, returned to break it up. Referee got caught up in clearing Kerry out of the ring, and he missed Pillman catching Ricky Morton with a knee from the apron. And Brock followed up with a gourd buster on Ricky and pinned him. I thought, this was fun for what it was. They actually gave these guys more time than they gave the four-way that came before it. But I think in front of this crowd with a lot of these old-school fans, you probably had a lot of old Jim Crockett Promotions fans, people who were in their 40s and 50s who bought a ticket to go to the show. They probably cared more, in all honesty, about seeing Ricky Morton out there than they did Jonathan Gresham and Nick Wayne. I mean, if you're an old school wrestling fan, are you there to see, the 17-year-old kid, or are you there to see Ricky Morton one last time in his final year? I mean, so it kind of makes sense, I guess, they would give this more time than some of the other matches. But I thought this was fine, for what it was. They cut to a crowd shot, and they showed J.J. Dillon, who was sitting in the crowd, and he looked like he hadn't shaved in about 3 weeks. And then he realized the camera was on him, and he threw up the four fingers. So we had yet another horseman spotted here on the show. We had a triple-A four-way match with former Ring of Honor World Champion Bandido, Laredo Kid, Black Taurus, and Rey Fénix. This is where the show picked up. We got our first banger of the night. This is where business really picked up. Tony Schiavone called Rey Fénix this generation's Rey Mysterio. And honestly, before he came to WWE, I would have said the same thing about Ricochet. If you would have asked me, who is this generation's Rey Mysterio, and Rey Mysterio is, he's a once-in-a-lifetime guy. But if, you know, gun to head, who do I think is this generation's Rey Mysterio? I would have said Ricochet before he went to WWE. I wouldn't say that now. Rey Fénix is probably as close to what Rey Mysterio was back then as we probably have today. I mean, honestly, everybody feels like Rey Mysterio now because everybody is trying to do what Rey Mysterio did, even the people who are not nearly as small as Rey Mysterio. But Rey Fénix is, if he's not the guy, he's pretty high up there. So I can't say I disagree with Tony on that. There was a La Mística from Bandido that got the crowd louder than they had been for anything else all night. This was great. I mean, so all the rotations, everybody was on their feet. They were going nuts for this. Laredo Kid went for a tombstone on Black Taurus, but he countered that into a lung blower. Taurus and Laredo Kid, they were both on the top rope, and Taurus gorilla pressed him from the top rope and slammed him down to the mat. Bandido hit Taurus with a code red on the floor, and Fénix came off the top with a springboard dive. Laredo Kid hit a tornillo off the top onto the pile. Bandido came off the top with Laredo Kid for a Spanish fly onto Taurus and Fénix on the floor. So this was basically just lucha insanity here. So in the ring for the finish, Fénix got Taurus up in a fireman's carry and dropped him with a sit-out fear factor for the victory. David Crockett, this is what I was talking about when I said it probably would have been better to just have David Crockett out there for the main event. David Crockett had clearly no idea how to call any of this. Not that he's the play-by-play guy, but he had no idea how to call any of this. He doesn't know any of these people. But I'll be damned if it didn't sound like he wasn't having a blast. He was predicting dives before they even happened. Even David Crockett, right, who doesn't know any of these people, he's an old-school guy. He can predict the dives before they happen. It's that predictable that the dive is about to come that even he can call it before it actually happens. But he sounded like he was having a blast out there. I thought this was a lot of fun. That first hour of the show was very tame. This is where the show really picked up. And then it kind of died down again, but this was the best thing on the entire show. I love this. So then we had Tom Hannifin, the former Tom Phillips, came out to join the announcers on commentary for the Impact World Championship match with Josh Alexander defending against MLW's own Jacob Fatu. If you've never seen Jacob Fatu in the ring before, well, shame on you, because he is one of the best in the business today. MLW does not have the platform that AEW does. They don't have the platform WWE does. Jacob Fatu is somebody who should definitely be on a bigger platform so more people can become familiar with what he can do in the ring. He moves around that ring in ways that someone who looks like him at that size and those proportions should not be able to move around. He is very good. So I expected this to be a very good match, and it was up until the finish. I thought this was a very good match. Fatu was impressing the announcers with a Hurricanrana early on. Alexander came back with a superplex. Fatu stuffed his C4 spike finisher and landed his springboard into the ropes. You know, kind of like when Jay Lethal is going for the lethal injection, but when Fatu comes off, he does the standing moonsault for a near fall. Fatu pulled off a double jump into a springboard split-legged moonsault for a near fall. This is like a 300-and-some-odd-pound Samoan in there pulling off this stuff. Alexander turned Fatu inside out with a clothesline and then put him down with a powerbomb backbreaker across the knee for a near fall. Fatu rallied. He sent Alexander to the floor before hitting a running dive out onto him. Fatu sent Alexander back into the ring, and Fatu went up top, hit a huge moonsault. Alexander came right back with a couple of German suplexes, and he went for a third one. Fatu landed on his feet, though, and he put Alexander down with a pop-up Samoan drop. So now both men are down, and the referee is counting. All of a sudden, we hear a commotion from the crowd. Somebody clearly is coming down to the ring. And out comes Matt Cardona and Brian Myers and Smart Mark Sterling. Brian Myers and Matt Cardona have been, teaming up in the past, but Cardona has been out with an injury, right? He tore his, I think it was the bicep, and he had to vacate the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. So apparently he is all healed up. They get into the ring. They start beating the hell out of both guys. Referee throws the match away. So it is a no contest. After what was a pretty good match, they gave us the no contest finish. Alexander and Fatu, they rallied. They cleared Myers and Sterling from the ring. That left Cardona. And Cardona was begging off. And as Cardona is begging off, they cut to the crowd, and we see Diamond Dallas Page sitting in the crowd. He gets up, and he climbs over the barricade, and he gets into the ring, and he turns Cardona around. He spins him around, and he hits the Diamond Cutter to a big pop from the crowd. But the best part of this wasn't even the Diamond Cutter. The best part of this is that after he gave him the Diamond Cutter, they played the Smells Like Teen Spirit knockoff music from WCW. They played his WCW music. I love it. I love that fucking music. So when I heard that music, that put a smile on my face. I loved it. The finish was lame, but here's the thing. When you book an interpromotional match like this, especially when it is for the promotions, one of the promotions, world championships, this is the kind of finish that you have to expect. It was not an unexpected finish. I was expecting a double countout. I was expecting some kind of interference. And that's exactly what we got. It didn't make it any less, you know, lame. But that's the thing. When you do a match like this, you knew Fatu was not winning the championship, right? We knew Alexander's getting ready to defend his title in a few weeks on pay-per-view against Alex Shelley. So, not an unexpected finish, but a shame that the match had to end that way. But that's the politics that get involved when you book a match like this. Fatu may not have won the Impact World title, but he is going to have a chance to walk out as their world champion next month. We got him back again in House of Glory. He's made a few appearances in HOG. He's coming back. We're going to crown a new world champion August 28th. It's going to be Jacob Fatu one-on-one against Brody King. So just because he didn't win the Impact World title, he can win a bigger and better world title in 1 month's time, and I'll get to call it too. So that's going to be a hell of a match. Brody King and Jacob Fatu, what a fucking match that's going to be. So we cut to the back, and Josh Chernoff, shout out to Josh. I used to appear with him on PWR a few years ago when I was doing the Pro Wrestling Report, making guest spots with Damian Nelson and David Hero, and Josh was part of the show on occasion. So he works for Fight TV, and he was in the back. He was the roving correspondent, trying to get a word with Jeff Jarrett, knocking on the door. The door opens, and instead of Jeff Jarrett, it's Jerry Jarrett. Jeff's in the background sitting on the couch. Jeff's father answers the door, and he allows Josh to enter the room. But before Josh could get a word in with Jeff, we see Jerry the King Lawler is in the locker room with the Jarretts, and Jerry Lawler had a chance to play heel. We really have not seen heel Jerry Lawler in many, many years. And frankly, I saw Jerry Lawler on the pre-show panel yesterday before SummerSlam. And he's been going through the motions for years. I mean, Lawler is—he's just there to collect a paycheck. I mean, there's no passion. There's no nothing. He shows up. He collects his paycheck. He'll do whatever they want him to say. Half the time, he didn't even know what to say. It's that generic stuff. Who, you know, picking winners. Who do you think is going to win this match and that match? And it's just—it's so. I mean, it's just like a ventriloquist thing, you know, where the pull—not the ventriloquist. The stick your hand up his ass. The pull string doll, right? Just pull the string and you'll get the same shit that comes out of his mouth. So when you get to see Lawler in his natural habitat, you kind of miss the old days when, you know, he was younger and he was doing the heel thing, because Lawler as a heel was great. So we got a little bit of heel Jerry Lawler here in this segment. And he was questioning why Ric Flair would come to Tennessee for his latest embarrassment, and he mentioned the fact that Flair goes around doing the strut and how he stole that from Lawler's idol. Stole that from the legendary Jackie Fargo. It's the Fargo strut. And he made Jeff Jarrett promise that he would do the Fargo strut tonight. So anyway, this was unexpected, seeing Lawler here. But it was nice to see a little heel shade for Jerry Lawler. Although I don't really have any interest in seeing Lawler anymore, but this was fine. So then we had Marshall and Ross. They sound like two guys that would have been on Friends, right? There was a Ross on Friends, right? I wasn't really a big Friends guy. But we had Marshall and Ross, the Von Erich boys, taking on Jay and Mark, the Briscoes, coming off that epic tag team match a week ago with FTR at Death Before Dishonor. Jay Briscoe hit both Von Erichs with the Tope Suicida. Mark followed that up with a somersault springboard plancha. Von Erichs caught Jay in their corner after that for a while. Mark got the tag. Mark hit a shotgun dropkick on Marshall. Caught Ross with an exploder suplex, and Marshall cut off the attempt at the redneck boogie. Marshall almost got the pin with the claw hold. The old claw. The Von Erich claw. Jay dropped Ross with the hangman's neck breaker, and Mark came off the top with the froggy bow for the win. So win for the Briscoes. We had the Impact Knockouts champion, Jordynne Grace, in a three-way match for the championship against Deonna Purrazzo and Rachel Ellering, who entered to Pat Benatar's Hit Me With Your Best Shot. So unfortunately, we were only maybe 30 seconds into this match when there was an injury that took place. They were rolling back and forth, and there was a whole sequence going on that they were in the middle of. And they showed the replay, and it looked like what happened is Jordynne Grace, it was like a roll-up spot, and Jordynne Grace accidentally rolled over Ellering's ankle in such a way where it looked like it bent at a nasty angle. And she immediately winced and screamed in pain, and then she kind of rolled away, and she was clutching at her ankle, and the referee went to check on her. The match came to a stop, so it wasn't like she's just selling an injury or something. Yeah, but they cut to a shot of Deonna Purrazzo. She didn't know what to do. She was looking at Jordynne Grace. They were looking at each other. It's like, what do we do now? We're 30 seconds into this, and we have an injured opponent here. So clearly she was hurt. She did continue the match, though. She did her best Cody Rhodes, and she soldiered on. So it may have just been that she rolled her ankle. She was able to finish the match, but she was never the same for the rest of this thing. Ellering caught Grace with a boot, but she came back with a spine buster. Purrazzo locked an armbar on Ellering. Jordynne Grace locked in a rear naked choke on Purrazzo. Grace set up Purrazzo for a superplex, and Ellering came over and grabbed Jordynne Grace for the Tower of Doom powerbomb spot out of the corner. Grace hit the Grace driver for a near fall. Ellering rolled her up with a crucifix for a near fall, and Jordynne Grace rolled out of that, got the rear naked choke, and Rachel Ellering had no choice but to tap out. So you could see Jordynne Grace when the match was over, checking on her on the apron, and Rachel just sort of waved her off and said, I'm fine, and she left, and I'm sure she wasn't very happy. I'm sure that was very disappointing for her. Hopefully nothing is broken. Hopefully, if anything, she just, you know, again, sprained her ankle or rolled it, and hopefully she won't miss any time. The problem is the crowd didn't give a shit about this match. The crowd did not give two shits about this match. And the injury only made it worse because it just kind of, it took the wind out of their sails. You know, once they realized that she was hurt, it got even more quiet. So they were going back and forth. And again, lots of near falls and reversals and things of that nature. But the crowd didn't really give these women a chance. The work, though, I thought was good. The injury was unfortunate. Now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. I don't always do a great job of taking care of my mind. Doing a very poor job of it right now with everything that's been going on. I feel like my mind is mush. But I forget. Yeah, I forget to take care of my mind. And maybe if I took better care of it, I wouldn't forget so much. I mean, how well would you take care of your car if you had to keep the same one your entire life? That's how our brains work. So why don't we treat them that way? It's important to keep yours healthy. And there are lots of ways to do that. One that I suggest is BetterHelp Online Therapy. I've been a user of BetterHelp in the past, so I speak from experience when I tell you that I found it to be really helpful. And if it helped me, then it can help you too. BetterHelp is online therapy that offers video, phone, and live chat sessions with your own therapist. You don't even have to see anybody on camera if you don't want to. It's more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. In my case, I matched with somebody in the first day, and she was very accessible whenever I had a question. She would even check in on me to make sure that everything was going well and remind me to do certain things that we discuss sometimes. If you're busy with work or family stuff, if you have kids, you've got a lot going on, that little extra reminder can make all the difference. Right now, our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/solomonster. That's betterhelp.com/solomonster. So then we came to the end of the show here, right before the main event. Pre-main event. And they cut to the crowd, and what do I see in the crowd? I see these two men. I see Mick Foley. And I see The Undertaker sitting together in the front row. Mick Foley, no doubt, asking Undertaker, hey, what's up with that Hall of Fame speech? How come you didn't mention me in your Hall of Fame speech? So they had to kiss and make up. Undertaker was that you can't see it in the image, but next to The Undertaker was his wife, Michelle McCool, and their daughter. They were there with him as well. Also not pictured in this photo, but in the front row off to the left, is Bret Hart. Bret the Hitman Hart was in town. He was in Nashville. I don't know if he was doing any of the Starrcade stuff, or Starcast, I should say. But he was there as well. And then fucking Kid Rock in the crowd again. As if I didn't get done talking about Kid Rock on my SummerSlam review last night. They put him on screen. He flipped off the screen. He was swapping spit with that YouTube woman, Trailer Trash Tammy, or whatever the fuck her name is. I got to see Kid Rock again in the crowd tonight. This guy is everywhere. He's hitting up all the wrestling shows. Maybe he'll be at Raw on Monday also. But then it was time. It was time for what everybody was here for, what literally the pay-per-view was named for, which is Ric Flair's final match. With Ric Flair and Andrade El Idolo against Jay Lethal, who is wrestling Orange Cassidy on Dynamite this Wednesday, and Jeff Jarrett, good old Double J, with Karen Jarrett in their corner. So we had here in this match, we had a WWE executive, a man who 24 hours ago was in the middle of the ring in front of 40,000 people at Nissan Stadium at SummerSlam. In the main event here on this show, tagging with an AEW and Ring of Honor star to take on another AEW star and Ric Flair. Jarrett came out to his My World music from TNA and looked to be in great shape. I have to say, Jarrett's music is actually underrated. I haven't heard that theme in a long time, but I like it. It's a good piece of music. So he came out and was walking around the ring in just classic old school heel shit. He's getting up in the fans' faces. These are people who were ready to throw down too. He had a couple of guys there who were ready to jump the barricade. They had Doug Dillinger doing security, right, for old time's sake. Like it's 1987 again. Let's have Doug Dillinger. Doug Dillinger is like fucking 80 years old. What the fuck is he going to do? If somebody wants to come over the barricade and go after Jeff Jarrett, what is Doug Dillinger going to do? Doug Dillinger has been the security guy for as long as I've been watching wrestling. And he was old then. So I don't know what he would have done had somebody tried to jump over the barricade. I think that would have been the end of Doug Dillinger. Unless he had some kind of taser in his pocket that I couldn't see. So I thought that was ridiculous. But Jarrett was getting up in everybody's face. He even shoved Conrad at one point. He shoved his podcast host. So after old Slapnuts did his thing, Jay Lethal was already in the ring. Andrade comes out by himself, and he walks down to the ring, and he stops at the head of the aisleway. And here comes the Nature Boy to his old theme music, old school theme music. He's out there wearing his iconic white robe. He has the original big gold belt, which actually is now owned by Conrad, so his son-in-law lent it to him. He takes off the big gold belt. He hands it over to Doug Dillinger. Flair was wearing a purple t-shirt with the sleeves cut off. He did mention that coming into the show that he would be wearing a t-shirt. I don't know what his chest even looks like after the surgeries he probably had. You know, I don't think he had bypass surgery, but surgery or no surgery, 73 years old, things are not going to be in the same position that they used to be in. You can see it from the skin on his arms. And I know he lost a lot of weight, too, when he got sick. So better to have the shirt on. I just think back to the Royal Rumble in 2008, Madison Square Garden. I was at that show. And they did a spot in that match where Jimmy Snuka was there. Roddy Piper was there. I think Piper was already in the ring, maybe. And then Snuka came out. I forgot who came first. But they did a spot where they went at it. Piper came out. He took his shirt off. I just remember thinking, put it back on. Please put the shirt back on. Some people just get to that age where, you know what? You probably should just keep the shirt on. So he had the sleeves cut off. The purple shirt matched the trunks. It matched the purple knee pads. He was all color coordinated here for the match. They had Mike Chioda in there as the special referee here for this match. And what Chioda has said leading up to this show would also be his final chapter. So this might have been the last match that Mike Chioda ever officiates. They had David Penzer doing the ring introductions. Everybody in the building was standing. This is what they came to see. This was the big attraction that they paid money to come see. They didn't come to see the undercard. They came to see this. And that would explain why they were so quiet for 75% of the undercard. Didn't seem to really care about it. Flair started the match with Jarrett. Jarrett, though, immediately tagged out to Lethal. And he took Flair over with a headlock takeover. They did one sequence in this match, and the crowd was chanting, "You still got it. You still got it," they chanted to Flair. He didn't do anything. He didn't do anything. He walked to the ring, and he took a headlock. "You still got it." They're going to follow him to the bathroom when he takes a shit. When he comes out, "You still got it." Again, this guy could do no wrong in front of these fans here on this show. Lethal backed him into the corner, slapped him, and Slayer slapped him right back, and Lethal took a bump and fell down. Flair tagged out to Andrade, who worked some spots with Lethal before he tagged out to Double J. And eventually, Andrade tagged Flair back into the ring. And so finally, we had the lockup. First lockup, officially, between Ric Flair and Jeff Jarrett. Jarrett busted out the Fargo strut. Flair did a little strut of his own. He gave Lethal a crotch chop. Gave some right hands and some chops to Jarrett. And this is where, this is the first point in the match where I started to think, okay, this is sad. He had nothing behind it. There just was nothing there. You know, he was probably trying to pace himself because they went 25 minutes in this, which is insane. But they went 25 minutes in this match. Now, Flair was not in the ring for the full 25 minutes. If he was, you'd be scraping him up off the mat with a spatula. But still, maybe he was trying to pace himself knowing how long they were going to go. But whenever he would throw a chop, whenever he would throw a punch, there was nothing. You know, there are people who are older who can get in the ring and that's all they can do is punch and chop. But at least they can make it look, you know, decent. He couldn't because he's 73 fucking years old. He hasn't wrestled in 11 years. Has no business being in the ring. So he had nothing on it. So it looked bad. And this is the first point where I said, oh, this is sad. Flair was moving pretty much the way you would have expected him to move at this point. Lethal snuck up behind Flair. Flair lifted his leg behind him to deliver the low blow. Jarrett took a powder out to the floor, and he was threatening to leave. Eventually, he walked back to the ring. He probably was stalling out there for about 4 minutes. So this was probably Mike Chioda doing the slowest count that you've ever seen. I don't know. I wasn't paying attention to what Chioda was doing, but boy, you talk about the referee showing some leniency here. I guess he didn't want this match to end on a countout, I guess. By the way, do you think Lil Nate was jealous that Chioda got to call this match and not him? You think he tried to call in a favor and said, "Hey, I'd love to referee this match," and he was told no? Had to be eating him up inside to not be doing the officiating for this match. Flair tagged out to Andrade. Jarrett tagged Lethal back in, and Andrade backed him into the Andrade-Flair corner. And Flair was able to choke Lethal from the apron. And then Flair climbed back inside, and he dedicated a chop to the Undertaker in the crowd. He said, "Undertaker," and he gave Lethal a chop. And right back in comes Andrade. Jarrett worked him over for a little bit, tagged Lethal back in, who came off the top rope with a double axe handle. Flair got into the ring at this point, even without being tagged in. He decided that it was time for him to get back into the ring. And again, he's delivering these weak chops to Lethal. And God bless Jay Lethal in this situation here, because he's doing his damnedest. He's doing everything he possibly can to make this look semi-devastating. He's bumping around for this guy every chop. He's basically Irish whipping himself into the corner. It's like a one-man show, basically. And Flair gets him down. Flair applies the figure four. He gets the figure four leg lock applied, and that gets broken up. So now we move on to the next phase of this match. I was shocked that Flair wasn't bleeding already. You knew Flair was going to bleed, right? Yeah, I mean, you can't have Ric Flair's last match. He bled in the pre-match angle. He bled in the parking lot. Why wouldn't he bleed in the match? So Jarrett grabs one of Karen's high heel shoes. Exactly the way they busted him open in that angle to set the match up. And he hits Flair in the head with the shoe out on the floor. And we don't see Flair now for a couple of minutes because he's doing the blade job. You don't want to show it. It's not like Chris Jericho in that match with Eddie Kingston on Dynamite a couple of weeks ago where the fucking camera zooms in on it while Jericho slices his fucking head open. Why don't they implant cameras in the canvas while they're at it? So when somebody goes down and they're slicing their head open, you can get a bird's eye view. You can get a view straight up. They could just show the whole thing. So Flair ducked away to go do his deal. And while that was going on, Flair's daughter, Megan, was in the front row. Now, Megan is married to Conrad Thompson. Megan gets up out of her seat, and she grabs a hold of Karen Jarrett. And she's assaulting this woman. She's got her, she's got her by the hair. And Karen just starts shouting at her. She goes, "You bitch, I'll fucking kill you." She's going off on Flair's daughter. So then Jarrett goes over to Wendy, Flair's wife. I think she stood up. And Jarrett gave her a shove, and she kind of fell back into her chair. Flair comes up bloodied, right? He's done his business now, and so Flair is bleeding all over the place. And I just realized we did not get to see Charlotte tonight, did we? She was there, but Rick wasn't sure if she would be allowed to be on camera. I guess she didn't get permission. I really thought that she would be given permission, and they would work a spot into this match where Karen was getting involved, and so Charlotte comes out, or if she's in the front row, she reaches over and, grabs Karen and does something. So I guess Megan, in this case, got the spot that maybe they would have done with Charlotte had they been allowed to. But anyway, Flair comes up bloody from the high heel shoe shot, and he starts clutching his chest. Flair is standing right in front of where Undertaker and Mick Foley are sitting. And he's bleeding, and he looks like he's gasping for air, and he's clutching his chest, and he's going, "Oh, oh." He's like he's having a heart attack, right? And I'm thinking, "Oh God, don't do this. Don't we've already had one tasteless angle many years ago where Flair faked a heart attack on Nitro. Let's not do this." So he's faking heart pain. Lethal comes over. It was all just to lull him over so that he can give him a thumb to the eye. He wanted to lure him in. And then he gave him a thumb to the eye to blind Lethal. And again, this is all right in front of, there's Undertaker and Undertaker's daughter and Michelle McCool. They're all sitting right there. So they put Flair back into the ring. Lethal gives Flair a vertical suplex. Now, I want you to remember something here. Remember what I said going into this pay-per-view. Ric Flair did an interview, and Ric Flair said that he wanted to do a dive in this match. And it was his daughter, Charlotte, actually. I don't remember where she was interviewed, but she said flat out, like, this is what he wanted to do. And I refused and said, "You're not doing that." She talked him out of it. Having now seen Ric Flair in this match, can you fucking imagine Ric Flair even attempting a dive in this match? This guy is out of his fucking mind. The fact that it even crossed his mind in the first place is so beyond ludicrous. I can't even imagine that that would have ever even come up. The way that he was moving around in this ring, can you even imagine? He never attempted, by the way, he had said coming into the match he wanted to do a crossbody off the top. That was his goal. He didn't do anything off the top, let alone any kind of a dive. Because I think he realized pretty quickly that this is not a good idea. I can't do it. You know, I can't be climbing up to the top rope. That would have been a disaster. The Ric Flair that we saw in this ring tonight, even attempting a dive, we would have had a fucking death on television. So thank you, Charlotte Flair, for talking some sense into this man. But he did take a vertical suplex. That was the biggest bump that he took. And Lethal covered him, and Flair was not kicking out, but Andrade made the save at the last second. Jarrett started kicking away at Flair's knee, and he applied a figure four leg lock to Flair until Andrade broke it up. Lethal went for the Randy Savage elbow off the top. Flair moved out of the way and made the hot tag to Andrade, who ran wild. He took the fight to both Jarrett and Lethal. He suplexed Jarrett. He suplexed Lethal onto Jarrett. He tossed Lethal to the floor. He caught Jarrett with a diving DDT from the middle rope. And then Jay Lethal accidentally struck Mike Chioda. Mike Chioda took a bump. He went down, and Andrade caught Lethal with a poison Rana. So now everybody was down. Flair was down, Lethal was down, Jarrett was down, Andrade was down, Chioda was down. Everybody's down. Flair made the tag while Andrade went for a plancha. So Andrade tags out. He goes for a plancha out over the top rope to the floor. Karen, though, pulled Jeff out of the way, and Andrade crashed and burned. So now Flair is all by himself. And Flair covered Lethal, but there's no referee. And he's got the visual pin, and the fans are counting along. They're counting up to 4, 5, 6. There's no referee. Jarrett grabs the guitar. You knew somebody was going to take a guitar shot to the skull. He grabs the guitar. He brings it into the ring. And he tells Jay Lethal to pick up Flair so they could just put this shit to bed. We're going to end this for good. Andrade, though, gets back in the ring. He pulls Flair out of harm's way at the last moment. And Jarrett cracks Jay Lethal over the head with the guitar. Shatters the guitar on his skull. Then Conrad gets involved. Now, Conrad is still in the front row. He didn't get into the ring or anything like that. He didn't go for a frog splash or anything like that. But he reached over, I guess the barricade or whatever, and he passed the brass nux to Andrade, only they weren't brass, they were silver. Silver nux. He passed them to Andrade. Everybody popped. Andrade gets in the ring. Flair is down. He's a bloody mess. He's face down on the mat. Andrade walks over. He's trying to revive him. He's saying, come on, come on, and he's trying to hand him the nux, and Flair is done. And this was like the most uncomfortable part of the match, because Flair, like, legitimately, he couldn't move. Like, he was trying to get air back in his lungs. He was exhausted. By this point, they had been out there almost 25 minutes. And you got to keep in mind something. You know that, you know, the nerves that he must have had coming into this match, when you're nervous like that, it's hard to breathe. Like, it's bad enough, like, just cardio-wise, if you've been working for 10, 15, 20 minutes, you're going to be sucking wind. But on top of that, you've got the nerves, right? You've got the butterflies in your stomach. That also weighs on you. I'm surprised he was able to breathe at all, and they didn't have to put the fucking mask over his face. Maybe they could put it over his eyes and his nose, like they did with MJF at the end of the Wardlow match, Double or Nothing. They put the oxygen mask on in reverse. So this was uncomfortable to watch. Andrade had to put the nux on his hand for him. Flair eventually stood up once he caught his breath, and he cracked Jarrett right in the mouth, popped him right in the mouth with the nux, and down goes Double J. And there is still no referee. We still have no referee. Mike Chioda is still down. Flair applies the figure four leg lock to Jarrett, who is unconscious. Now we have another referee. I think Tony Schiavone was like, that's Dave Miller. I don't know who that was, but Dave Miller. Okay, whatever. Here comes referee Dave running down to the ring, and he rolls inside, slides into the ring, and he counts Jarrett's shoulders to the mat for the count of three, even though Flair's shoulders were also down, but we'll ignore that. And he counts out Jarrett, and Ric Flair, in his final ever match, maybe, possibly, wins the match for his team. He goes out with a win. Even the retirement match in 94 with Hogan, right, he lost. The match with Michaels in 2008, he lost. The match with Sting in 2011, he lost. Flair has to stay retired because he actually got a win. He didn't have to do the job for a change. Confetti rains down. Tony Schiavone tells David Crockett, I'm going to go head down to the ring. And he leaves. He's going to go talk to the man of the hour. Flair slowly exits the ring to go over to his family in the front row to see them. He goes over to where Undertaker is. Undertaker leans in and was telling him something. We couldn't hear what it was. Mick Foley and Bret Hart congratulate him as well, and they give Flair a fist bump. So Tony Schiavone has arrived. They're going to do this interview outside the ring. And he calls Flair the greatest pro wrestler of all time. All of a sudden, we can hear the floor director loudly shouting. It got picked up on the feed. The floor director is shouting to the talent to come out and surround him. Surround Rick. Surround him. Surround, like he's being swarmed or something. Like the SWAT team is coming out to go tackle the guy. But they wanted the wrestlers in the back to come out and just stand in the background and surround Rick while he gave his interview. And so a bunch of them came out. And this was the scene, put that up on screen here. This was the scene here as Flair, a bloody mess, stood outside the ring giving his final speech. You see in the background, we have a whole bunch of people. There's Scarlett. A bunch of wrestlers were out there. There's Bret Hart in the front row, Mick Foley. Well, we got a murderer's row there in the front row there, huh? of Hall of Famers. We got Undertaker, we got Mankind, we got Bret Hart. And there's Flair. There's Flair, blood coming down his face, and Flair says he doesn't know how something so special could happen twice to anyone, but it did for him. Said he had one of his best matches ever in this building against Ricky Steamboat. Said all of his kids and grandkids were here tonight. Said that he adores all of the fans. They are what makes everybody who walks through the doors tick. Said he could not remember half the match, but he hopes that he didn't let anybody down. He just doesn't remember. And he thanked his family and friends, and he ended by saying that everything that we've heard about him is true, which I don't think that's something I would necessarily go bragging about. But he says everything we've heard about him is true, and he says, now I'm going to go downtown tonight with Kid Rock. No doubt, Flair is already five beers into the night, probably a couple of shots, before I even get to your super chats. I'm sure he's already at the bar working up a tab as we speak. So they roll the credits, old school style. Remember those old WCW pay-per-views when they would go off the air? They would roll credits at the end. So they're rolling the credits, and they put up a slideshow of Flair photos. And they threw up the old Jim Crockett Promotions logo at the end before cutting to a shot of Bob Caudle back in his home telling everybody, so long for now, which I thought was a nice way there to close out the show. 25 minutes this main event went. I don't think anybody in the audience was necessarily going to complain about that because this is what they came for. This is what they bought a ticket for. Now they can say, I was at Ric Flair's final match, so long as he stays retired. I was at Ric Flair's final match, right? They get to hold on to their ticket stub now. And Jeff Jarrett deserves a lot of credit, I think, for the work that he put in here in this match. It was very smart for them to book someone like Jarrett, who's been doing this for a very long time. He knows how to get heat. He was a heat magnet out there in that building tonight. You know, Jay Lethal and Andrade, they were in there doing all the big moves and stuff, you know, working their asses off. But Jarrett was the MVP. Flair could barely, he couldn't do anything. Flair didn't have to do much. Flair just had to be Flair. Flair just had to be there. He had to bleed. He had to do the figure four and throw a few chops. He did what he can do. But I think Jarrett is the one who really carried this match, and, you know, a lot of stalling and stuff, but just old school heel tactics to really, you know, get the crowd riled up so that when Flair got his big moment at the end, you know, they got the big payoff and, you know, he got one over on the heels and everybody gets to go home happy. So it was worked very much like an old school wrestling match, but I was just left at the end here, you know, and again, if I put that picture back up, you know, you look at that and this for Flair, I'm sure, is going to go down as a great moment for him because he has his friends and his family and his, you know, guys that he's worked with, guys he respects. Obviously, he thinks the world of Undertaker. He's had his issues before with Foley and Bret Hart. He called Foley a glorified stuntman. He and Bret have had wars of words over the years, but now they all seem to get along with each other. And so this is a moment for him, I'm sure, that he's, you know, just happy he got through the whole thing. And this is going to be a night that he'll never forget. So for him, it was a special thing. And I'm glad that, you know, he didn't have any sort of issues or episodes that would have had him carted off here at the end of the night. He made it through. And now we have seen the last of Ric Flair in the ring. I don't ever need to see Ric Flair in the ring again. This needs to be it. This needs to be the end of Ric Flair the wrestler. Leave well enough alone. Go out on top. Go out with a win. Go out the way that you wanted to go out. Surrounded by all the people that you wanted there, your family. You can't ask for a better send-off at this stage of his career outside of the one that he already had many years ago, and he blew that a long time ago. So hopefully this truly is Ric Flair's final match. The undercard was ended up being underwhelming because they didn't give a lot of the matches a whole lot of time. It was very clear they wanted to make sure they did not run out of time for the main event. So there were a lot of 4 or 5 minute matches earlier in the card. And the women's match, I mean, nobody seemed to care about the women's match. But the AAA match was actually, I think, the most fun that I had watching the show was the match with Phoenix and Bandido and Taurus and Laredo Kid. And the main event, I think, you know, look, they did as good a job with it as they could. I thought they did as good a job with it as could possibly be expected because Flair was very limited in what he could do. So that is Ric Flair's final match, maybe, perhaps, possible. I don't want to lie to all of you by telling you that it is, and then we come to find out in 2 years that, you know, Flair's coming back to wrestle Ricky Morton or something like that. I don't think that's anything that people are asking for. Let's see what you guys are talking about. Let's see what you guys thought. If you actually watch, I'm curious how many people actually watch the show. If we get any kind of updates on buy rate or, you know, Fight TV purchases. I'm going to be very curious to see how the show did. Rizzo. Dropping 20. I saw Rizzo in the chat last night. I really thought Flair was dead after that match. The rest of the pay-per-view was eh. Crowd seemed quiet. Hopefully this really is the last match. Jacob Dearmore with the $5. I'm still on your podcast, so I won't be watching this just yet. I don't know if you have addressed this or not, but do you think Triple H will get rid of the gimmick pay-per-views? No, I think that those are probably here to stay. Who was that popping off here before in the chat? I don't know who that was. Anyway, first timer with the $2. Sometimes it's okay to not get back on the horse. Yeah, and it's okay not to do a dive off the horse too. I'm just having seen him in that ring tonight. I don't know what that would have looked like had he made the attempt, even to do a crossbody. Crossbody would have been one of the safest things he could have done off the top rope. I mean, the guys just had to stand there and catch him. I think he would have just turned into a pile of dust had he tried. He was not moving around well at all. So why he thought, after training with Jay Lethal for weeks, that he could pull off a dive or something stupid like that, just goes to show you how delusional these people can be. That it took his daughter having to talk some sense into him. Thank God she was there. Otherwise, this would have been a disaster. Fire Panda, hopefully I go 4-0. Soon I will have a better streak that... Yeah, Fire Panda's on like a super chat streak here. Lakers Pats, dissatisfied that Flair did not do a 450 splash. Well, I personally was very disappointed that I didn't get to see Flair do the Black Arrow. Or bust out a Spanish fly in this match. GCC 305, hey Solomonster, plan on listening to you while I am at work, but I want to ask, buy or sell based on Be the Booker, Hogan against Liger or Brody against Austin? Hogan against Liger, that'd be interesting. Yeah, Hogan against Liger. Quintus Brown with the $10. That was something, LOL. A lot of scary moments, but thank God Rick got through the match. Props to everybody involved in the main event. I hope that this is it for Flair. Also, both four-way matches were good. Boots. First fatal four-way was my match of the night. Quintus says, Rick didn't care about the belt. He's ready to party. Yeah, so at the end, they tried to give the big gold belt back to Rick, and he didn't want any part of it. You know why? Because he probably couldn't hold it up. That belt probably weighs 12 pounds. He would have dropped it as soon as he got it in his hand. He had nothing left. He was completely out of gas. That belt is huge. He didn't want none of that belt. He's like, you carry that fucking thing. I don't want to have it. Give it back to Conrad. He owns it anyway. Shinakuma, thank you for the four. Mason Rawlison with the $5 super chat. Thought Gresham looked great tonight. Hopefully him and Tony Khan can patch things up. Well, for his sake, if he wants to continue to wrestle, it's in his best interest to patch things up with Tony Khan, because if he wants to continue to wrestle in any kind of a prominent, you know, spotlight, it's probably not the smartest thing to cuss out the person who not only runs the second biggest company in the country, but he also runs Ring of Honor. Tony Khan runs two companies now instead of just one. And maybe cursing the guy out was not the smartest thing for him to be doing. So for his sake, if he wants to continue to wrestle on television, I think he's going to have to make up with it. Groovy Goose, do you go back and listen to old streams and podcasts? Sometimes, yeah. If there's a particular topic I'm curious to go back and listen to that I, you know, talked about something of interest, I might go back and check it out. Dex Baker with the $10. I was in the crowd on the floor. There was a guy explaining everything to his girlfriend, but didn't know who the Wolves were. So that was the crowd. I mean, there you go. I mean, that's the crowd that you expect. They're there to see Flair. They probably don't even know who half these other people are. You think these people know who Nick Wayne is? I mean, some people do, but the vast majority of that crowd, they don't give a shit about that. That's not why they went there. Yeah, they went there to see Flair. He says, but everyone got into it from the Gresham match on. Uffman Entertainment with the $5. No WWE participation tonight, but now that it's the Triple H era, because you see WWE signed talent participating in shows like these in the future. Yeah, absolutely. I think they'll be more open to allowing people to make appearances at special things like this. Vontel, who do you think has the higher ceiling, Carmelo Hayes or Montez Ford? Ooh, that's a good one. Carmelo Hayes or Montez Ford? I'm going to say Montez Ford has the higher ceiling. Montez Ford is bigger than Carmelo Hayes, and I know some people don't want to admit that size matters in wrestling, but it does. To the people in power, it does. To the people who actually push people. Your physical look, your physique, your height, your weight, all of these things do matter to some degree. It just so happened that Vince McMahon was someone, you know, with that old school mentality that he's always been a body guy. So obviously to him, that was always very important. And we've heard stories about Kevin Dunn, who, you know, is just a fucking idiot, talking about you know, this woman is, we're not going to push this woman because she's not pretty enough, and, you know, she doesn't have, you know, her tits aren't big enough. We've heard stories about this guy for years.
Fuck Kevin Dunn.
That's right. But Montez Ford is somebody who I think probably gets the edge because of that. You know, he is a bigger guy, and I think that will probably be something that works to his advantage. And I also think charisma-wise, he's got... I think he's got more charisma than Carmelo Hayes does. I think Carmelo is great. I'm a big supporter of his, but I think Montez Ford is the total package. Bad Guy Jack, I do podcasts because of you. Thanks for what you do. Also, I did not see this event. Well, you don't have to see this event. You just have to stay for the review, and I'll fill you in on everything you missed. You don't have to watch a thing. Drew Johnson, thank you for that first 50 spot, man. He says, HBK against Flair is the real retirement match. Epic. And Drew dropping a second $50 super chat to say, Sala Monster, you're the man. Thank you for everything that you do. Well, thank you, Drew, for the $100 in super chat. I appreciate that. We've got, Manson with the $3. I turned 50 today. Have been listening to you since I was a kid. Keep up the good work. Your choose entrance music. Oh, if I could choose entrance music. If I could choose entrance music, what music would I enter to? God, what music would I enter to if I came out to theme music? Probably a Hall & Oates song. Out of Touch, although I'm not the one who's out of touch. Out of Touch is my favorite song. So maybe I'd come out to that. I don't know, I have a whole bunch of songs I could come out to. Fire Panda, currently watching from the festival in our town. Can't let the streak die. What kind of festival? Drew Johnson, HBK is God. Who cares about Hart? HBK retired him at Survivor Series 97 with his own finisher. Thank you, Vince. I think Vince McMahon is cosplaying here in the chat tonight. Well, he's got plenty of free time on his hands now. What else is he going to fucking do? A user dropped $5. Didn't see it yet. Did he die? No, he is still breathing. He is still breathing. He did survive. Christian Landsverk with the $5. Depending on the buys this gets, do you think any other wrestlers of a similar age try a pay-per-view like this? No. No. This happened because Conrad put this thing together. Conrad is obviously his son-in-law, and he wanted to do this. He wanted to help put something special together for Flair, because not only is Flair his father-in-law, but he's a big Ric Flair guy. He's a big Ric Flair mark, and so you have that aspect of it, and also the fact that it's Ric Flair. This, whatever you think of Flair, he has cemented his place in the wrestling industry, and he's a Mount Rushmore guy for a lot of people, and you can't just do this with any random wrestler. I mean, this was a special thing for someone who is one of the biggest stars in the history of the business, put together by someone who is very close to him. I don't think this would work with just anybody else. I mean, who would you even do it with? It would have to be somebody on the level of a Flair or a Hogan or somebody like that. Hogan's another one who, you know, we will hopefully never see on the inside of a wrestling ring ever again. This couldn't work with anybody else. This was a Flair thing, and you can't do this with anybody else. Clapstick 77. Really hoping for Hogan, Steamboat, and the Ghost of Harley Race to make an appearance as well. They needed Ole Anderson on commentary. That would have made the price tag of this pay-per-view completely worth it. Let's get Ole Anderson, he's in a wheelchair these days. Let's roll out Ole Anderson to tell us what he really feels, what he really thinks about Ric Flair. Oh, that would have been great. That would have been great. He would have shit on everybody. Everybody in the back. He would have shit on Tony Schiavone. He would have shit on David Crockett. You're a cheap son of a bitch. Your father didn't pay me enough. He would go off on everybody. I would pay for that. Matthew Rice, 2022 has been a hell of a year. Austin and Flair have a match. Vince is gone. Vince had a match too. And Triple H and Stephanie are running WWE. Who would have thought? And it's only July. Well, actually, it's almost August. 7 minutes, it'll be August. And Elijah Record, or Ricard. Elijah Ricard with the $9.99 just bought the Monk Pack Variety Box using code Solomonster. Can't wait to try it. Also, love me some Magic Spoon. That Honey Graham flavor is something else. Keep up the great work and love the show. I just had a Monk Pack bar, actually, during the pay-per-view tonight. I had one of their nut and seed bars. Our newest sponsor. Monk Pack bars are fantastic. Love those things. See, if I would have tried them out when they sent me some product and I thought it was shit, I would have just passed on the whole thing. I can't promote one of these products if it tastes like shit. Monk Pack is fucking great. It's delicious. I love it. Do me a favor. Before you guys head on out, do hit that like button, because it is going to help with the videos as far as getting them in the recommendeds on YouTube. It is very helpful. So please go ahead and do that. And thank you to everybody who did join last night. Not only tonight. Tonight we had a lot more people than I expected in here. I didn't know what to expect with this Flair thing. I said, if I get 600 people in here, I'll be happy. And I think we had 2,500. So you guys have been fucking great all weekend long. But go check out that SummerSlam review if you didn't see it. If you did not watch it. It has well over 40, approaching 45,000 views. It will probably end up breaking 50,000 views this week. So I thank you for that. And I thank Randall Hamilton for subbing. Picked up a lot of new subscribers this weekend. I was going to skip Be the Booker, but if you want me to, I guess I should. I'll tell you what, where are we at? 612 on the likes? Get me to 650 and we'll do Be the Booker. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. We'll do Be the Booker, and then we'll head on out of here. Come on, Booker man. Boy, we have a lot of Be the Booker fans. All right, let's get into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to Be the Booker.
You pulled my arm. I can't deny the people. I can't deny the people what they want. I have to give the people what they want. I am a man of Let's start with the, why don't we start with the ladies this time? We usually go with the guys first. We'll start with the women's Be the Booker first. We'll change it up a little bit. Maybe this will change our luck. We don't have a lot of luck with this one usually. So maybe if I go with this first, maybe it'll end up better. We begin with, it's already off to a fucking great start. We've got Io Shirai, who is now Io Sky. I have to get used to calling her by her new name now. She is now Io Sky. The genius of the sky. Former NXT champion. Finally on the main roster. See who she's going to be stepping into the ring with here. Io Shirai going one-on-one with Rhea Ripley. Very likely going to be a Monday Night Raw match sometime in these next few months. That's a match we'll probably see on TV very soon. Although they're both heels, so maybe we won't see it just yet. But they're on the same brand, so it's very possible that we will be seeing that match. You know, I realized something after the fact. I didn't really talk about it last night. We saw Becky Lynch, right? We saw Bianca Belair facing up with Bayley and Io and Dakota Kai last night, and the heels backed off. If Becky and Bianca need a third person, you know who that is. You know who that third person is probably going to be. It's going to be Asuka. We could have Asuka, Becky Lynch, and Bianca Belair facing off with Io Shirai, Dakota Kai, and Bayley. They need a third person. You got to go with Asuka. So let's head on over to the men's. We're already... We're already 1-0 so far. We're on a hot streak here. And we begin with former WWE champion himself, Big E, who was not at SummerSlam, although he was helping out with some of those next-in-line auditions that they were doing to try to recruit college athletes. Trying to keep busy. Big E is doing well. He is doing better. See who Big E is going to end up with. It'll be Big E going one-on-one with Dave Meltzer. Big E doesn't stand a chance. Have you seen the guns on Big Dave? Meltzer's got bigger guns than I think half the WWE roster does. Probably three-quarters of the AEW roster. Big E doesn't stand a chance against this guy. I mean, if Big E wants to come back to the ring, Dave Meltzer is the last person he wants to step into the ring with. He don't want none of this. He don't want none of that five-star frog splash. Let's see. We've got on the tag team side, we've got Techno Team 2000. And all the young fans in the chat go, who? Who are these guys? You mean to tell me that the guys in that picture didn't get over? I'm shocked. Shocked, I tell you. Techno Team 2000 taking on Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose representing the Shield. Ambrose and Rollins is that's a win. Techno Team 2000, though, is a fail. That is a no-go from me. Techno Team 2000. Did they even last 6 months? I don't even think they were on television for 6 months. They may not have lasted 3 months. I don't think they had a very long run. But that women's match, Rhea Ripley and Io Shirai. Looking forward to seeing that at some point on my television screen as I watch Monday Night Raw. Eric Watts was horrible. Yeah, Eric Watts is not going to be getting a Hall of Fame induction anytime soon. Power Spy says Billy Corgan took the L by not having an NWA title match on the card. Billy Corgan took an L the minute that he announced Tyrus was going to be wrestling for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship against Trevor Murdoch next month. That was a giant L as soon as that match announcement was made. Yeah, I mean, you think about it. You had a lot of representation from Impact and MLW and even AAA on this show, but nothing major, nothing really mentioned as far as the NWA is concerned. I mean, some of the people on the show may also wrestle for the NWA occasionally, but there was really no NWA representation on the show, which would have been very appropriate given that this was a Ric Flair send-off. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with the NWA. It's a shame, too, because I was really into the NWA stuff when they first launched Power. But I just can't get back into it. Kind of out of left field, but who do you think will finally beat Jade Cargill? Chris Statlander. Do you watch MLW once in a while? Yeah, I try to catch it when I can. They've got some good talent on that roster. It's just always... You know, the teases on social media and stuff that there's a big deal or a big announcement, you know, coming or a big TV deal or something. And supposedly there is. There's something in the works for MLW, but I'm waiting to find out what this supposedly is. You know, they need to try to take it to the next level. They don't have to be WWE, but I think they definitely need to take it to that next level because right now nobody really talks about MLW as much as they probably should. Is MLW still tied up in litigation with WWE? It's litigation that they brought against WWE. So, yes, the lawsuit is still pending against WWE. Dr. Scorpio, thank you for the super chat. Speaking of representation, use the code word SolemnMonster to order Magic Spoon to represent the new way you eat breakfast in the morning. Hey, you guys do a better job of plugging this stuff than I do. Ricky Edmond with the $5. If they did a great job in the invasion angle and finished it through WrestleMania 18, what would the top three main matches be that you would book? I think you would have wanted to do an Austin Goldberg match at some point. You know, the two biggest stars of that era for their respective promotions. I think that would have been a natural match to do. I know, you know, DDP wanted to do the match with The Rock. I mean, you could have done that, I guess. I mean, I'm trying to think of who the top names would have been at that point. You had DDP, you had Booker. They eventually brought in Hogan, Hall, Nash, and Goldberg. Steiner really could barely go at that point. He had some fucking terrible matches. Hall was just a fucking wreck. He was never going to last. I mean, as case in point, right? He lasted 3 months or 4 months before he got shit-canned. So, yeah, I mean, you're looking at the landscape as far as the big names are concerned. I think Austin and Goldberg, assuming Austin didn't want to work with Hogan, Rock and DDP. They did Rock and Booker. They did that at SummerSlam in 01. You're talking WrestleMania 18, though. You know, I mean, they didn't bring in Sting. So, I mean, are we considering Sting? Because he didn't come in. I could think of a few different people I would have loved to have seen Sting in the ring with. Undertaker at that point was not doing the dead man gimmick, so I wouldn't have done that match. But Sting and Rock, Sting and really almost any of the top WWE guys at that time, you know, would have worked. Yeah, it's a shame. It's a shame how they blew that whole thing. It still pisses me off. We got Rizzo. The pandemic really killed the NWA's momentum. Also, who does Triple H bring back? I say Cross and Scarlett, Gargano and Bray. I think Cross and Scarlett are going to get another shot. And I think Gargano is ultimately going to wind up back in WWE. Obviously, he brought back Dakota Kai already. So she's back. Bray, I don't know what's going on with Bray. I think Triple H would give him another shot, but I don't know what he wants to do. I don't know where his head is at. He's always dropping these teases on social media. I mean, does he want to come back or not? I don't know. I think the ball is in his court. I think Triple H would definitely be open to having him back. You know, when the whole Wyatt family thing started in NXT, was the Wyatt family a thing in FCW? Or did that start once they were already rebranded NXT? I'm almost positive that was an NXT thing. And that would have been under Triple H. So I think Triple H has a connection to those guys. I think, you know, I say those guys, but I think someone like Bray, I think, would do well under Triple H. So yeah, I think those names that you mentioned will ultimately find their way back. Yeah, maybe even Jonah. Bronson Reed. Still can't quite figure out why they got rid of him in the first place. You know, Triple H made him the North American champion. He didn't have a lot of time as the North American champion, but if anybody deserves another chance, I would say that it's Bronson Reed. He never should have been cut in the first place. Juan Ocampo says, what does Moxley say to Kevin Dunn before he goes to bed?
Fuck Kevin Dunn.
That's what he says. I will see you live on the Dynamite stream Wednesday night. Come on back here. We'll do it all over again. The first Dynamite for the month of August. I'll see you guys later. Take care.